Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. Are the EU and NATO living in alternative realities? Sanctions on Russia are immiserating Western consumers, and Brussels refuses to acknowledge that Europe can't replace Russian energy imports anytime soon. On top of this, NATO doubles down on a strategy that has only yielded disaster. Are there any adults in the room? To discuss these issues and more, I'm joined by my guest, George Samueli in Budapest. He's a podcaster at The Gaggle, which can be found on YouTube and Locals. And here in Moscow, we have Dmitry Babich. He's a political analyst and editor at InnoSmi Internet Media Project. All right, gentlemen, crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick it off with George in Budapest. It's been a very exciting week, I would say, George. I mean, I'm titling this program EU-NATO Circus because that's what it was. A new strategy came out of NATO, which you and I discussed in another venue at quite length. Didn't make a whole lot of sense to me. But one thing that's very clear is that G7, EU, NATO, they are essentially one now. There has been a complete fusion. And NATO appears to be taking the lead, which, of course, is the backdoor for the U.S. to run all three. And this is what I got from their new strategic concept, which has no original thinking and falls back on this gobbledygook values nonsense here. So it is a circus. They're talking to themselves. They're not communicating essentially what they claimed all along is to project stability. As a matter of fact, they're just doubling down on what has already failed. Your thoughts?
No, absolutely right. In your summary, I mean, they call it a new strategic concept. I mean, there's nothing new, nothing strategic, nothing conceptual about it. So since 1991, we've known that NATO had no purpose for existing. And so it's been constantly inventing new reasons to exist. So, you know, we've had the humanitarian intervention, preventing mass atrocities. Then we had the war on terror. And then we've had all sorts of other things like the war for women and so on. So in a sense, now they've invented a new concept, which is indefinite expansion. Because if you keep expanding indefinitely, sooner or later, you are going to get into an awful lot of trouble with an awful lot of states who don't like you expanding into their neighborhood. And then, of course, that in itself becomes a reason for NATO to go on existing. So what the talk now is about the Indo-Pacific. Suddenly the Indo-Pacific is in the NATO domain. We don't exactly know what the Indo-Pacific really means. It's a kind of a concept that they've invented, like the Western Balkans. You know, there's another thing that they're very preoccupied with, not really defining what Eastern Balkans is, because I guess Western Balkans sounds a lot better. But the point is that what they're now doing, I mean, it sounds like they want to persuade India to join NATO against China, which because there's no other, because India is nowhere near the Pacific. So that's the problem that here, that NATO creates the other, the enemy. And what does it do? Well, it keeps moving into the enemy's neighborhood, provoking an inevitable reaction. And then NATO says, hey, look at how important we are for global stability.
So, Dima, your thoughts here, because, again, the mantra is NATO is a defensive alliance, but why, if an alliance is defensive, why does it need to expand? And as it expands, it creates animosity in the areas that it's expanding to. Witness Ukraine. Dima, your thoughts.
Let's first remember how jubilant the NATO leadership was about this expansion, about Finland and Sweden becoming the new members. They're planning to become new members, but the decision has been taken. Turkey has, as usual, lifted its objections. And remember how Jens Stoltenberg said, Putin wanted less of NATO, he will get more of NATO. And Putin destroyed the disagreements inside NATO. Okay, just tell me, which disagreements? I mean, NATO was unanimous in attacking Yugoslavia in 1999. NATO was unanimous in bombing and destroying Libya in 2011. Even Luxembourg sent its military planes to bomb Libya. I don't know why. You know, the result was awful. The result was an avalanche of refugees and the destruction of the country, you know, basically a civil war there, which was terrible. So tell me, where is this huge disagreement? You know, Mr. Orban just objected to some of the new values of the European Union, and he was demonized. If you read the Western press, Hungary and Poland must be occupied by some very vicious, you know, almost alien forces, you know, which are opposing everything that is good in Europe, simply because these people objected to two or three points in the EU's list of values. So George is absolutely right. NATO is creating enemies, then it expands, and then it also says, oh, this enemy is so jubilant about our disagreements that we should crush dissent. You know, the latest idea is that there should be no more consensus, you know, about military action, which I think is a very dangerous thing, because then NATO will be attacking anyone who is not to the liking of the United States and of the UK. So basically, it's the same. I'm sorry, it's the same evolution that Germany made between the 1920s and 1940s, getting more and more authoritarian, getting more and more aggressive, and destroying disagreements inside your society because the external enemy is so vicious.
Well, it's interesting you point that out. And I think there is a difference here, George, is that NATO, we remember, you know, decade after, you know, we're not, it's an alliance, it's not directed against anyone, all this nonsense. Well, now it is. Okay, now, at least they've taken the mask off. Russia, China, and this is what they want to galvanize the entire alliance around, which is, it's pretty thin. I mean, one of the things with these big confabs I've noticed is that this is an elite conversation. It doesn't really seep further down. You know, it's these people that they feel that they're the mandarins of the universe and that they're so very important. But I can tell you, looking at the Asian press, you know, the G7 meets, so what? The Brussels makes a dictum, so what? I mean, they have an oversized sense of themselves on the world stage. And what many people say is that, you know, they're isolating themselves by directing all of their focus on Russia. And we heard last week, now China, George.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And that's very interesting that during announcing their strategic concept, they several times repeated, oh, every country has the right to determine its own future. That's what NATO says. You know, no third country is allowed to. But the interesting thing is that everything that NATO does is to coerce third countries. I mean, they spend all of their time going around the world telling India, oh, you have to join us in demonizing and sanctioning Russia, even though it has nothing whatever to do with you. It goes against your foreign policy. It goes against your national interest. It goes against your history and traditions. But you have to join us. And they were doing that even to China. You know, during the G7, in their statement, they say, China has to join us. It has to stop enabling Russia. So they say, yeah, everyone has to determine their own future, except those who don't determine their future along us. So once again, it's like, you know, you have a right to join us. You don't have a right not to join us. And so, and then, you know, we obviously had the case with Serbia. Serbia invites Russian foreign minister to come and visit it. And then NATO moves in and says, no, it can't fly over our airspace. So where's Serbia's sovereignty? Where's Serbia's right to shape its own future? So that's again, you know, the NATO dictum, which is, you know, we're creating these enemies. And that's interesting, is not, there's nothing in the strategic concept about cooperation.
There you go. That's exactly it. Let me go to Dima on this. That's exactly where I wanted to go. Dima, you look at this new strategic concept that they, I think it was the last one was in 2010, And we have events playing out on the European continent right now. Of course, they're making reference to Ukraine. Not one word on how to resolve and end that conflict. Not one word. Okay. So what is this defensive military alliance all about? Okay. If they're not going to talk about peace in their own neighborhood. And of course, the argument has been made, and albeit it's the argument that the Russians have made, is that at the very core of this conflict is NATO expansion. No addressing that issue whatsoever. Go ahead, Duma.
You're absolutely right. There is nothing about cooperation, but also when NATO says nice things, it doesn't act on them, or it doesn't notice how its own allies are actually acting against these values. I mean, women, peace, and security. I just love that, you know. I think you discussed it with George earlier, but, you know, this is one of the concepts of NATO since the year 2000. Come on, you know, the Ukrainian President Zelensky drafted women into the army. Now, if you are a woman journalist, or if you are a woman librarian, or if you are a woman doctor, then you have to have your own military ticket. You are like formally enlisted in the army. The army can draft you for its own purposes. You have to go to, a military training every 3 years. So this is women, peace, and security. This is the symbol of, NATO's spreading democracy.
I'm really glad you mentioned that, Jim, because George and I, we did a long video on this on the Gaggle, which I encourage everyone to look at. I mean, we were trying to figure out why those three words work together. Maybe you're explaining us to
us. Absolutely. Well, I mean, in general, correct me if I'm wrong, but there is something wrong with modern Western concept of feminism. Like, women in the United States still don't have, affordable kindergartens. But feminists are not talking about that. They're talking about women flying air jets, you know, women killing people at the battlefield. This is all very important with women's rights. But they always forget about kindergartens. In Russia, very few people talk about women's right to kill or to head, munition companies, but women do have affordable kindergartens here. And this is the main point. Maybe this is the solution for the abortion problem.
Yeah, but it's very interesting you mentioned that. I mean, George, real quickly here. I mean, this is one of the most irritating things in this document is the word values. I'll give you 30 seconds before we go to the break. Go ahead.
Well, that's the thing. I think it's the actual document is 11 pages long, and the word values comes up 17 times. So everything is really about its values. But of course, it never really specifies what these values are. You know, so it's assumed that they're, God, mother, and apple pie, and all those things. But of course, it could mean, all sorts of other things, as Dima pointed out. It's about, our values are drafting women and sending them out on farmers.
It's like wokeism. It's very fluid. It's values what we think at the time to our advantage. Right, gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We're going to go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on some real new stake. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. This is the home edition. To remind you, we're discussing some real news. All right, let's go back to Dima here in Moscow. Dima, I guess, what is it, 800, 3 million more dollars the Biden administration wants? And I'm losing count how much money is being sent there. Well over 50% of what Russia spends on defense a year. But there was some interesting stories coming out about, and something that we've predicted here, is some of the high-tech stuff that the U.S. is sending, very expensive, missile defense, related to missile defense and whatnot. There are some reports that it's landing in other hands. It's being sold on the black market. I knew this was going to happen. If it isn't true, in fact, true, we need more cooperation. But these stories are beginning to circulate. So not only is the conflict in Ukraine not winding down, and that's a craven choice on the side of the West and Zelensky's backers, but now we have very sophisticated and very expensive military hardware floating around into third parties. What could possibly go wrong, Dima? Go ahead.
Well, the most tragic part of it is that as Russian troops push the Ukrainian troops away, you know, putting them at a distance from the Russian-speaking areas, you know, the megapolises in the east of the country, such as Donetsk and Lugansk, and in the south, it's Kherson. Unfortunately, Americans are supplying long-distance weapons, which make it possible for the Ukrainian army to strike not only at these cities, but also just, you know, on Saturday, they struck at Belgorod, which is a Russian city, killing five people in the center, in the downtown Belgorod. So, in fact, these weapons make this war a lot more dangerous. You know, I have a friend who is Ukrainian, who lives here. You know, he became a Russian citizen, but he always sympathized with Ukraine. And he's from Kherson. So his family, they all applied for the Russian citizenship when the Russian army moved in. And I asked him, okay, Kherson is probably going to become part of Russia. Does your family want it? He said, yes. I said, but why don't you settle for a middle solution, like Kherson People's Republic, like DNR or whatever? He said, no, this is not going to work for us. We want full protection. I mean, put us in our situation. We want to be part of Russia because it means security. The Ukrainian regime is terrible. We are ready to put up with that for some time, if there is hope ahead. But we don't want to live like the people in Donbas during these 8 years. When they were not Russian citizens, when they were bombed by the Ukrainian army, this situation between the two fires is the worst. So this explains Russia's actions. And the problem with these American weapons is that they make this gray zone between Russia and Ukraine the zone of constant threat. It was HIMARS strike at the distance of 300 kilometers, which is about 200 miles, more than 200 miles. This is a huge distance. And you are right, some of these weapons do disappear. I challenge my American colleagues, you know, the American journalists, look at your own newspapers, look at the 1990s, 2000, 2010s, how many Ukrainian weapons popped up in North Korea, in Iraq, you know, all kinds of places.
Go see the film Lord of War. That's what it's all about, and it's a great film. George, this is something you've talked about, and I think you're probably one of the first, actually, to talk about it. Just to kind of dovetail off what Dima was saying, there can't be any half measures at this point. It has to be a total inclusive deal, and it will be dictated by the Russian side at this point, okay? Because Dima's absolutely, you know, this kind of 50-50 gray area thing. No, that's not acceptable. Too much has happened. Too much has been spent. Too many people have died. There's too much distress. This cannot happen again. And that's what the solution of this conflict is going to be, a total solution. Thoughts?
Yes, and no, it has to be a total solution because whatever Russia's original intentions may have been on February the 24th, which was essentially just to liberate Donetsk and Lugansk and then, you know, just leave it there. I don't think that's a solution now because the Americans, especially, but also the British and the rest of NATO, they're going to keep pouring in ever more sophisticated and dangerous weapons into Ukraine. They're going to encourage Zelensky and his gang to go on fighting this war. So there is no point at which Russia can just simply say, okay, that's it, we're done, we've achieved our objectives, because they won't have achieved their objectives. Because as long as they keep lobbing these missiles, and you know the point that Dima was making, yeah, on Saturday, they hit Belgorod, they hit targets inside Russia, when they specifically had promised the Americans, and the Americans told the public, oh, no, we have it on the word of the Ukrainians, they are not going to target any places in Russia. Well, of course they're going to do it. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, we knew that they were going to do this, and we know that they're going to target Crimea. I mean, they've already said that they're going to target Crimea. They're going to target, Donetsk and Lugansk. They're going to keep doing this, and the Americans are going to know that they're going to keep doing this, and they think that this is the way to bring Russia down by essentially keeping this war going, and that's humiliating and eventually defeating Russia. So Russia just can't allow this. I mean, Russia then has to essentially take over the rest of the country and remove the Zelensky people from power. You know, whoever they bring somebody else in, whether it's Medvedchuk or maybe even bringing back Yanukovych, but they cannot allow these people to stay in power.
It's interesting you say that because there was a Western, and I want to stress, a Western poll, a public opinion poll conducted inside of Ukraine in the last few days. And you, essentially 50% of Ukrainians blame their own government, as well as Russia, to be fair, but blame their own government for the fate that they've befallen them. Dima, it's very interesting. I can remember places like Responsible Statecraft and all that saying, Ukraine has won the war, although Ukrainians are completely united. And you know, I think that will have to be scrubbed at some point because it's so embarrassing. Because the problem so much in the Western coverage of Ukraine, even before the conflict, that it's a very complicated and a very ununited country. And we're seeing this here. I have called what's going on in Ukraine also a civil war. And I think a lot of people, you've already alluded to it, how people in different cities of Ukraine, nominally Ukrainian, but when something like this happens, they want a total solution. They do not want to have this kind of rolling floor that Ukraine has been since its independence. Go ahead, Dima.
Well, I mean, just for Americans to understand what's going on, imagine that some kind of a very anti-American government came to power in Canada, and it prohibited all the U.S. movies in Canada. You have to dub them in French and watch them, you know. Of course, there will be a lot of people in Canada who, if war happens, or if there is a chance to become a U.S. citizen, would opt for that, you know. No, simply because there is more freedom, you know. The same story with Ukraine. You know, the Ukrainian government prohibited Russian movies, prohibited Russian books. Right now in Odessa, it is prohibited to give children Russian education, which is like prohibiting English education in English in New Orleans. You know, Odessa is our New Orleans. And this has been going on for 8 years. And lately, this has been going on for 30 years. And you are absolutely right about the miscalculations of the Western. I mean, the Western public has been saying, oh, Putin's plans have not been fulfilled. You know, his vision was wrong. But look at the American vision. Their idea was that there would be a guerrilla war. I mean, the Ukrainian army would collapse, but there would be a guerrilla war against Russia or Turkey. Nothing of the sort. The Ukrainian army is resisting ferociously. That's true. But on the territories which Russian army has taken, there is no guerrilla war. Sometimes they kill a Russian official, you know, the Ukrainian groups, special forces groups, they blow up cars, you know, the usual terrorist activity. But there is no guerrilla war. Why? Because people are not hostile. Well, they're equally hostile to their government in Kiev and maybe to the new authorities, but they are not ready to start a guerrilla war against the occupier. You know, well, this is unification.
The people on the ground, that's one thing. But George, President Biden said, you know, when asked, you know, about a high energy crisis, gasoline, you know, and of course, you know, what the Western publics are going to have to suffer. And he says it as long as it takes. Well, I think that, you know, that time frame is all of the at the NATO confab. I think it was Patrick. It was Ray McGovern that said 30 blind mice, which I think it was a really good way to put it here. I don't think they actually speak for people on the ground that have to pay such high energy prices, and I think they're all going to rue the day for their bombastic emotional expose. And completely disregarding the interests of their own people. Go ahead, George.
Yeah, that's completely. And the other day, they had this White House official who was interviewed on CNN, and he was asked this very question, well, what price are we prepared to pay? And he said, well, we have to pay, you know, whatever price it takes for the liberal world order. The liberal world order.
Their order. Yeah. Their order.
So we exactly. I mean, so it doesn't matter. You don't have any food on the table. You don't have any gas to put in your tanks to get to work. It's the liberal world order. And that really, you know, he said he blurted out the truth, which is that this is an elite's war. It's all about their goals. They use Ukraine very cynically in order to essentially destroy Russia, you know, eventually also to destroy China and to dominate the world. They don't care at all about what the public thinks. And they're obviously, these policies are leading to disaster. You know, the Germans are screaming, you know, Russians are going to cut the gas off. Look what the Russians are doing. They're cutting gas off. Well, you know, a moment ago, you were saying that you were going to basically cut yourself off from fossil fuels.
My point here, I just got 10 seconds here, and I'll end it this time. I want to say to both of you and to our viewers, the people that want to defend the liberal world order, they don't know what a loaf of bread costs. They don't know what a liter of gasoline costs. They don't know how much electricity costs. They don't care because it doesn't affect them. That is the new liberal order, okay? Elite protection at the expense of everyone else. That's the end of my speech and the end of our program. I want to thank my guests in Budapest and here in Moscow. I want to thank our viewers for watching us here. See you next time, remember, cross country.